in Boston. So that was
a week.
About two weeks later. I mean, I've forgotten. It was August. It was August, and the meeting. I mean, I think I've got the dates. I mean, the meeting. In actual fact, it's all written up in a. Something of this is written up in the New Scientist. Dorothy and I wrote a paper for the New Scientist. See, Tom didn't come back. He was stayed on in the States for 3 months. And when we came back, we wrote up something for the New Scientists and something for Nature for their 100th or something anniversary. And Nature actually rang up and begged for a paper. Funny. And that was really the end of that. 2.8 angstrom map. Not right in every detail, but pretty well right. Now, that's one part of the story, which is from then, you know, the immediate times after it's come out, it's all written up or reasonably well known. What is probably not so well known, a very important relation to Dorothy and Poding crystallography and the methodology of it, was that a man called Michael Rossman came into her life. Have you met Michael?
Well, he was at the Royal Society.
Yes, he was. He gave the last.
But I didn't talk to him.
I mean, he is a marvellous man, and at some stage, I don't know what to do about him. He's actually written me a letter in there, just about his feelings concerning Dorothy when she died. He gave a very good speech here. We got an honorary degree for him. And Michael said that when he, I won't go into his background, but he was working in Cambridge with Max Perutz on hemoglobin, and he had these ideas about using what we call non-crystallographic symmetry, more than one entity in the asymmetric unit. You can use that to get phase information. Now the trouble is that the transcendental equation, you can't solve them. And Michael knew that, but he couldn't stop thinking about it. And Max Perutz said to him, stop wasting your time, Michael. Make a heavy atom derivative, solve hemoglobin, and you'll have no problems. And Max knew this. Michael knew this, good advice, but he wanted to work on these ideas. Because clearly his intellect was catching a fire. And he spoke to Dorothy about it, because she had two instruments in the asymmetric unit. In the end, Dorothy felt the same as Max. He really would be better advised to get on with experimental work and get a reputation, because it was quite clear, if you're involved in hemoglobin solution, you're right as rain. No problem about your future. But Michael decided that he wanted to work on these methods, and to Max's great credit, although he thought it was madness, he allowed Michael to do it. But Michael says that even greater thing was that Dorothy encouraged him and said, yes, Michael, if you really want to do it, you should do it. And he and Dorothy got in touch, and he started working on her problems, and that's when Eleanor arrived, and she'll have to tell you what happened then.
So we're back in 61.
Back in 61, yes, and yes. That's another story. Eleanor can give you how she and Dorothy and David and Michael got working on things called rotation translation functions, and it's very important to know that this came from Dorothy's lab, because these programs and the thinking behind those is just embedded in the current methodology, as are things like anomalous scattering that she picked up incidentally looking at B12. Okay, so that's stopped. Where do you want to go now?
It's just to tie up one thing. I mean, what has gone down? Who has gone down in history as the solver of insulin?
I hope nobody has. I mean,
is it?
I would say. I mean, if any, I mean, I'm quite happy to see the statement Dorothy Hodgkin solved insulin. It doesn't worry me, because for Dorothy Hodgkin, you have a laboratory. I mean, she would always stand up and say, you know, that, and she'd list names. It'd be mostly those four. But she will also include Margaret Adams and Marjorie Harding, as would I. But the people who were involved in that last year and a bit were the names I've given you, as Tom, Fijian, Eleanor and me. But there was irreplaceable support from Ted Baker, Margaret Adams, Marjorie Harding, and other names. And again, this is a bit of gossip, if you want to turn it off. And I don't know how much you want.
Thank you.
And I feel that it was a real privilege to work with her. She was, I think, the most perceptive, intelligent person I've ever met. And I've met a few, I must say, and I could never get over the swiftness with Dorothy picked up both technical crystallographies and anxieties I had, which might be about the data or somebody in the lab. She was so quick. She could read my face, which was embarrassing sometimes. But I mean, I got on very well. I have enormous respect for Dorothy. I go well beyond respect. Great person. And I, you know, compared to David Phillips, who was a formidable man, she had such an ability to get into your essence, and you feel completely relaxed and completely honest. Now, you'd cover things up for David because you didn't think he needed to know everything. Dorothy, you, the whole thing was on the table, and that's one of the reasons why she's a good scientist. There was no fooling around. So you could say things are going terribly. You know, nothing's working. You know, we've, this river is moving. Now, David would look worried and serious, but Dorothy said, oh, well, she said, you better try some other ideas. I mean, she was never, ever flat. And I think that's quite remarkable. But I mean, I'm in a position where I can be flapped. But I mean, that whole episode of incident, she never undermined our confidence by any evidence of anxiety or despair. And that's crazy. That's incredible. And that's why I have no difficulty in saying what Dorothy did together. She set up a group, and we were, in a sense, the experiment. Now, I was on longer than... I wasn't on as long as Eleanor. I had a profile of skills that nobody else had. I mean, most people were specialists. Now, I finished up completely abandoning computing because Eleanor did that. It seemed to me no point me doing something that she was extremely good at. And I just thought it was efficient. So I had no computing skills, but I did have a breadth of things that the others didn't quite have. But I wouldn't have said I sold insulin, actually, though I think I was probably quite important in it. And I would give Dorothy just as much credit as me. Mm. I mean, on those early Pattersons, I mean, she was there with us. And it was solving them that was crucial. And I don't know how you say somebody solved insulin. I really don't.
No.
Yeah.
No, that's right. But I think it's important for me, given that site.
Into protein structure, electron density, and how these two aspects of crystallography come together was as good as anybody, certainly as good as mine. And she built that model with me. I mean, brutally, Fijian didn't do a thing. Mm. He walked around the he walked around the room talking, and they said, saying, you know, we have got 24 residues, keeping all the score where we were. But I mean, Dorothy and I worked on that, and you know, if solving the structure was translating electron density into structure, then we solved it together.
Mm.
And I wouldn't have said her part was less than mine for a moment.
Right.
I think if you say solving a structure is to keep the integrity of the scientific effort going, then she solved the structure.
Mm.
And I didn't have a great part in that. I wasn't raising the money. I think I was very useful to her in keeping the experimental side up and running well.
Mm.
But that was just a job I was employed to do, and it was a lovely job, but it just was a job.
Mm.
And I just happened to be in place, like Banting and Best. Best was in place. I can claim no credit for running equipment. Other people could have done that. So I think I was important, but I wouldn't have said I sold insulin.
Mm.
I would argue with somebody who said that.
Right, that's fine.
And I don't think Dorothy's position should be underrolled and undervalued.
Mm.
And if somebody wants to take that up with me, I'd be very happy to explain why I think what I think. I think from the outside I was more obvious, and I was there all the time, and I talked too much.
Mm.
I was obviously an identifiable insulin figure. When the structure came out, you can imagine the world was on our doorstep. So there was a lot of travelling, and curiously it was the insulin was discovered and used in 1921, so we were very near this famous 50th anniversary. Mm. So we got inundated with requests for papers, and it was a very exciting time. But important to realize, at the same time as insulin came out, hemoglobin had already come out, chymotrypsin had already come out, ribonuclease had already come out, and then of course myoglobin and lysozyme had already come out. So that we never, at least I never felt that there was something unique about the insulin structure. It was part of beginning of a detonation of protein structure.
How does it compare in size?
Insulin was the smallest protein that had been solved pretty well. It was 6,000 molecules, a monomer.
Mm.
It was two monomers in the asymmetric unit. So it was smaller than myoglobin, smaller than lysozyme. But it had something the other crystals didn't have, in my view. It is lovely 3-2 symmetry, and the zinc coordination was so beautiful. And it had a wonderful properties of assembly, monomers to dimers, and none of the other proteins had a well-characterized pattern of assembly. And one of the extraordinarily satisfying things about the structure is we could look at the physical behavior of the molecule in solution and understand it in structural terms. It was immediate. We could just look, bang, there it was. Much of the chemistry, and something I've not said, is we had very strong links by this time, thanks to Tom. When the insulin structure came out, Tom went to Aachen and met up with some chemists, who actually were friends of Dorothy's, to be fair. It was an old link. But Tom went to this lab, probably actually on Dorothy's, I mean, I'm guessing, but I suspect the invasion of Dorothy, and Tom went there. But anyway, he got these characters so interested in the structure, it led to very, very long collaborations with the insulin chemists, which spread to other labs over the world. But what that meant is we had all this chemistry, and we could just relate it to the structure. It was fantastically satisfying. We could explain, and more importantly, somebody came up and predicted what he might do with the structure, and it worked out. So we felt that we were using insulin structure in a very rewarding way. We're opening chemists' eyes to what happened and allowing them to think of reagents they could map onto the structure and get specific reactions. And that worked, and that was really important. It opened us to people working on the immunology of insulin. We had contacts with a very interesting man called Ed Aquila, another one called Don Steiner, who discovered proinsulin, look at the processing of the molecule. So the structure opened up the biology, the chemistry, and the solution behavior, and that was very important. Fundamentally, it was very important pharmaceutically.
Is that something that was important to Dorothy?
Absolutely.
I mean, she'd always had that in view.
Yes. She was profoundly interested in diabetes and the history of diabetes, and she had a slide which you've probably seen. You know the slide from the... Do you want to see
it?
No, it's a very... The pharmaceutical chemist at Novo Nordisk started using the insulin I structure to design insulins whose pharmaceutical behavior was more appropriate for injection than the natural one that was provided by cattle and whatever. And she was very interested in anything that led to improvement in the treatment of insulin and improvement in the way you gave the therapy. She just was generally interested in that. And it was the same with the B12, it was the same with the penicillin. She was very, very aware of the medical implications of these molecules. And it was where she wanted to be, no question about that. And anyway, that was one of the great things about structure coming out. We had this enormous resonance with the medical profession, or the research profession. It was really wonderful, actually. But of course, Dorothy did have an ambition. It's one of her minor failures, that we thought we would try and work on the insulin receptor, the molecule. Insulin comes and binds to a receptor and turns the cell on. Well, we got some various people in, a couple from Japan, called Nori and Kawako Sakabe, who had worked on insulin in Japan, I'm afraid got it all wrong. But being Dorothy, she got some money, they came to England and got their problem sorted out. They did a sensible structure. But while they were there, we got them interested in working and trying to get the receptor. And it was, God, it was primitive. It was terrible. We did terrible things. It was a complete disaster. We'd never got anywhere near the receptor. But we gave...
Had it been isolated even?
Oh, people are aware of it, yes. Yeah. I mean, there's a man in America, Quattro Casas, who claimed to have got something, and we tried to repeat his work. But Nair and Kawaka were not really good biochemists. And another wonderful scandal. They didn't understand about radioiodine. Do you know what radioiodine is? Radioactive iodine?
Yes.
Iodine-131.
Yes.
Well, they were working with this stuff, and they didn't realise. Because their English was a bit dotty. We thought they understood, and they didn't. When they left this radioactive lab, we did all radioactive, it was white hot radiation. And we didn't know. This man, the radiation officer, and he took on his job, a man called Robin Offord. He got this Geiger counter, and he said, ho ho, he said, let's see what your iodine count like. And he went to this man's. Is what the goiter?
Thyroid.
The thyroid. And that thing went off the scale. And everybody's thyroid was off the scale. And they went down, and this bloody lab was soaked in radioactive iodine. Boy, did this shit hit the fan. That was our attempt to get the receptor. And we were just out of our depth. Now the thing is that the receptor's still not crystallized. Then we're now getting large amounts of from a pharmaceutical company called Novo Nordisk. It's beautiful stuff, gorgeous, but it's highly glycosylated. It's very big, and we cannot get crystals. That is a major disappointment.
So you're still working on that now?
Oh yes, it's the most one of the most important problems in biology. It's the structure of the insulin receptor. Mm. We can't crystallize it, and it's a real disappointment, I'm afraid. But, no, Dorothy would have been working on it too if she'd been alive.
Yes.
And working. That's where the research would have gone, and she'd have been working on it.
So this was
in a crazy sort of way. Yes, that started in about 1974. Mm. We were
so
unbelievably naive.
Anyway, yes.
73, 74. I mean, it was just stupid. Maybe it was 72, but it was before the last few years.
Mm.
And she was very tolerant. I mean, she found the money. I don't think she believed we were up to it, but she never stopped us. It was one of those failed things. Now, one of the other things that happened that was important, that when insulin came out, we had a MAP 2.8 angstrom spacing, which was okay, but Dorothy revealed what I totally agreed with and wouldn't have wanted thing any other way, the desire to improve the quality of the MAP, which nobody else had done. You see, up to then they solved their MAP, got the structure, hooray, what's next? Now Dorothy said we should go to higher resolution, so we did. We went from 2.8 to 1.9. It took us about 3 years, actually. Hard, unremitting work. And the people we were having dinner with tonight were involved in that.
Mm.
We finally got pushed the experimental phases out to 1.9 angstrom spacing.
And how do you do that? What do you need to do to get better resolution?